Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow campers, E.
Once again.
No, I thought you were going to say something else.
No, I was not. That is all I have to say right this moment. I'll have more.
And Eric.
Wait, should I have a dramatic pause as well? What's up, everybody?
That was a pretty dramatic pause, I guess.
All right, tonight we're recording a special episode driven entirely by questions you guys have asked since we launched. And like I said in the first episode, we had originally planned on making one episode per movie, but we could probably be persuaded to do more. After reading through some of the questions you guys have sent in, there was no way we were going to be able to tackle a movie as well as answer your questions in the half hour we allot for the show. Consider us persuaded.
Indeed.
Since there is no way that I could read all the questions that we got here on air, I only picked two. Sorry, bro. There is some overlap in the questions, so I'll just read them together before we get into it. Jason Schultz writes, I wish there was more information about what Pamela was up to before the first film. Not to mention the lives of the locals between the films. Surely there were hunters. Nobody ever ran into Jason. And the second was sent to us through our Facebook page.
You said Jason who?
Jason Schultz.
Oh, shit. I got my hopes up. I thought it was another Jason.
All right, everybody shut the fuck up. And the second was sent through our Facebook page by John Potter. John writes, I have a question. We have always seen Jason's mother. How come we have never seen or heard of his father?
Because he dead.
Because you dead.
Did you hear me? I say he dead.
Well, I kind of feel like Jason Goes to Hell sort of touches on Jason's backstory a little bit.
Also touches on my goddamn nerves.
Yes, it is a well-established fact that we here at Return to Camp Blood fucking hate Jason Goes to Hell.
But continue, sir.
I feel like you have to look at the comic books for a little more information about Pamela, her early story, and her marriage to Elias. I specifically want to talk about Pamela's story, which is a comic book series by Mark and Draco and Sean Moll. It was a two-issue miniseries put out by Wildstorm in 2007, and I am very much a fan of what it means to the Friday canon, although I'm not really sure many of you others would consider it canon. Reading the comic book, I was surprised because it pretty much dealt with Pamela's story as it's being told by Annie, who was the hitchhiker in the first movie. And actually, Miss Voorhees tells the story herself. It's a conversation that we don't see during the ride that Annie would take to her eventual death. It starts with while Pamela is still pregnant with Jason. They actually were living in the trailer in Ohio.
It's September of 47.
Yeah, 47. And right off the bat, you can already tell that Pamela is somewhat unstable. Like, she thinks already that Jason is talking to her through the womb.
It's really weird too, because you see a lot of, like, I don't know, like a lot of like pregnant women will talk to their baby and stuff, but this is an entirely different thing. If you saw it in public, you'd never go back to that place. Ever.
No. But I mean, by the comics, I mean, she's got a valid reason for being insane. I mean, we call it Stockholm Syndrome. Look at Patty Hearst, for God's sakes. I mean, Elias, I mean, it definitely a masculine man with simple needs, but he was a bastard.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the book, at least this series, and actually, I think he's actually mentioned in Jason versus Leatherface, but which is another comic book based on Friday the 13th. But he's always mentioned the same way. You know, he's a fucking drunk. He's a dickhead. He is physically abusive.
And Pamela doesn't even want to tell him that she's pregnant.
Nope.
I know.
When you're reading through the comic, you see that, and it's not even implied. It's like literal. You see her. She doesn't want to let his dad know that she's pregnant just because of how he is and how he's gonna react. Like, you have the scene in the living room when you first bump into him, and he's yelling at her about, like, he's trying to watch a show, and then she gets into the whole talking to Jason thing again, and he gets up and loses his shit, and it's pretty bad. And you can understand two things while you're reading it. You can see, A, why she doesn't want to tell him, and B, why she's pretty much nuts already. And this is well prior to, you know, obviously she's still pregnant with Jason, so this is way before the whole drowning thing that really pushes her completely over the edge.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you can totally see that. I mean, it's there's a snippet in the comic where he's telling her to pipe down, listen, 'cause I'm trying to listen to my show, and flings a cigarette, nails her right in the face. But Pamela's statement was, he was also, under his gruff exterior, a lover of the performing arts. She was justifying his actions.
Yeah, trying to rationalize or whatever.
Rationalize his abuse. And, I mean, just ask Patty Hearst, it'll drive you crazy.
It's sort of, the vibe that I get from reading the comic is that she doesn't even realize that she's being abused. She thinks that what's going on between her and Elias is fucking normal. And to a modern ear, that's just fucking insane. Like, I mean, sure, you...
It's crazy, but not uncommon.
I mean, I'd like to say that it's not uncommon anymore, but I'd probably be wrong.
Yeah, you are.
However, to a majority of, you know, progressive thinking people, the idea that it's okay for a husband to be physically and or verbally abusive is okay, that's some shit that we got rid of a long time ago. I mean, obviously it still happens.
Message!
I mean, in our eyes, of course, but I mean, they wouldn't have safe houses for women, or Verizon wouldn't allow you to donate your phone and then it go to battered women to get them cell phones to where they can get help and then disappear. And she's just stuck in the middle of nowhere, Ohio, without a damn thing. And I mean, as soon as the first stressor comes through where he throws a cigarette at her, you automatically see her ear and Jason whispering, telling mommy, tell him now.
That scene, actually, that's one of my favorite scenes of this whole comic book series, because you now understand like why the events of the first movie happened. She is already a little off her rocker because she literally thinks that the fetus inside of her is talking to her. And then when Elias is bitching about her talking while he's trying to watch his show, and she answers Jason out loud, you know, she's basically like, you know, hey, I can't do that right now. When he's like, you know, tell her now, mommy. You know, she's like, I can't do that right now. And she says that out loud, and fucking Elias thinks that she's saying that to him. And then he beats the fuck out of her.
Yeah, to say the least, he gets so passionate. and then Jason's talking right to her. No, mommy, I'm all right. But he'll kill us next time. You know what to do, mommy.
Just reading that comic, as you see the descent that she's going through, when, you know, everything starts to get worse and worse, just reading it is really unsettling as you're reading it, just seeing what's happening. And, you know, you can tell what it's doing to her mentally. It's really, really unsettling.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. After he hits her that last time in the comic, she, like he said, Jason, quote unquote, tells her, you know, he's going to try to kill us. He's going to kill us next time. She gets it in her head that, you know, she needs to kill this motherfucker. So she runs outside and she sees an axe and she gets it. She bashes Elias in that fucking head. And then she burns the trailer down, which is an obvious homage to the fact that, you know, she would set fires at Camp Crystal Lake, you know, however many years later.
Right.
Yeah, I never even put that together. Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, even then, but when she's looking at the axe and she doesn't know what to do, then Jason tells her, kill him, mommy. Kill him.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
yep. I feel like I've heard that somewhere before.
I know, huh?
Yeah. So I just can't put my finger on it.
So what I like about this comic, even though most people would not consider it canon, the thing that I like about this the most, and I have to be honest here, is that if events in Jason and the Jason timeline played out this way, with Pamela killing Elias while she was still pregnant with Jason, that would mean that the events of Jason Goes to Hell would be null and void. Like, they wouldn't mean anything. Because that movie hinges on the idea that Elias leaves Pamela and Jason after he's already been born, and then fathers a child with someone else to set up the premise for Jason Goes to Hell. So my favorite part of this whole idea is that Jason Goes to Hell never fucking happens.
You know what, though? It's too late, man. There's no going back. It happened. There's no saving us from,
you
that,
keep
from
saying
that heresy.
That.
The Elias was supposed to make an entrance in Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives, at the graveyard, and we see Alice Cooper as the gravekeeper, and we see him die, and we see him talking to the killer as if he knows them, and then, you know, we see him die. What was edited out of that was Elias Voorhees.
When New Line took over the series, Kane Hodder was actually supposed to play Elias in two of the New Line movies, but that never really materialized, which I think is a huge disservice to the series. Like, I feel like that would have been a great addition to the films, to know a little bit more about Jason's dad, you know, outside of the context of Jason Goes to Hell.
You know what I wouldn't be totally against, but it would have to be done, like, fucking flawlessly, is, like, a prequel that plays around around with the whole idea that was addressed in the comic series, in the little comic miniseries, where you get to actually see some kind of, you know, backstory. You get to see it on the screen, you know what I mean? I think that wouldn't be a bad idea, but it would have to be done right, or I'd have to beat the shit out of somebody.
Yeah.
When I first saw the reboot movie, I fucking hated it. But it took me seeing this one picture, and it was of Jason as a teenager. It was a mock-up for a fake TV show, but it was a mock-up of Jason as a teenager holding, you know, having his hockey mask and holding a chainsaw, and the subtitle was, you know, Friday the 13th, the early years. And just the idea that Jason had been killing since pretty much his mom had been offed, that kind of made me appreciate the new movie even more, because I felt like I could make room, at least in my mind, I could make room for the canon to change a little bit.
Well, and see, that's not a bad thing. There's nothing wrong with what we're used to seeing, getting a little bit of change to it, getting something added to it, as long as it's not bullshit. You know what I mean? As long as it's not something that somebody's just throwing in there just for the sake of putting a movie together. You know what I mean? As long as it actually lends to the credibility of the franchise, then there's not a thing wrong with it, you know?
As the second part of Jason Schultz's question, as far as why there's no mention really of the locals between the films, or why nobody ever ran into Jason, I'd really have to refer you to the reboot, because I think that the reboot addresses this quite clearly. Clay, while he's walking around the area looking for his sister, actually knocks on the door of a local, and the lady basically says that, you know, Jason didn't want any trouble. You know, he didn't want you to mess with him and stuff. So the locals know what Jason's doing, and I feel like, at least in the reboot, they present it in such a way that the locals almost, I won't say encourage, but
they're almost complicit in a way.
Exactly, and it actually brings me back to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where the locals kind of do the same thing.
As long as you, it's kind of like leave them alone and they leave you alone, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't be there and there's no problem.
But I mean, if you want to talk about it through the series in general, I mean, Jason has done a good, he has dealt with locals that have tried to encroach on his turf. I mean, even fucking Crazy Ralph eventually was a victim of Jason.
Sad, sad day.
Crazy
Ralph could have done a lot of good for the community.
Yeah, warning people about, it's got a death curse.
Never come back again. You know, sometimes I try to do that Crazy Ralph thing, just kind of spontaneously, and it doesn't sound like Crazy Ralph. It comes out more like Harry Carey. I'm not sure why.
Holy cow.
On our first episode, we ran a contest. It was a silly contest about who could answer this one trivia question, which was what the first machete kill of the series was. And Phil from Staten Island actually got it right when he replied that the snake that Bing Crosby's son killed in the cabin in the first movie was technically the first machete kill of the series. So what I'd like to do right now is go ahead and play the audio, because he actually did call in and leave a voicemail. So let's go ahead and play the audio, and we'll go ahead and respond to it.
Hi, this is Phil from Staten Island, and I'm really digging the Camp Blood podcast, which is cool. And kudos to the guy about the Ralph, to play the Crazy Ralph bit at the end. That was awesome. But I just wanted to say, you know, did Jason really drown, or was that a myth? You know, we don't know. Did his mother really believe that he was dead, or was she just mad and used it as an excuse and actually trained Jason to do the killings? Because how did he learn to become a killer? You know, if it was instinct or not, maybe the new movie will have show something in between or beforehand. We got to wait and see, you know?
Kudos for getting it right, dude.
But in response to what he was talking about, I think the main gist of what he was asking was, you know, did Pamela actually think that Jason was dead? I feel like he was asking that question in the context of the reboot, and in which case I would have to say no. The reboot gives us really no real indication that Jason actually died.
Well, I think that it's plausible from both movies, the 1980 Friday the 13th and also the 2009 reboot. And I think the reboot actually does a better job of kind of explaining this, because he's got an underground lair that comes out of a school bus. And we know that Jason supposedly drowned in 1947, and the 1980 Friday the 13th, we know, took place in 1979 based on Pamela Voorhees' tombstone in the final chapter. And I don't know so much that he was trained to kill as much as it shows in the comics that he was developing a bloodlust, like many other psychopaths, by dissecting various animals. And I think that maybe they just live separate, and him stealing the fuel where he finally, in the reboot, where he finally found his signature hockey mask. And I think that that would give more credence to the fact that he did not drown. And she was just pissed off that people decided to have sex instead of watch her deformed mongoloid psychopath.
Well, I mean, if you look in the second issue of Pamela's story, which we referenced earlier, it shows a child Jason already displaying problems insofar as he was killing fucking small animals, which is indicative of a fucking serial killer.
Didn't he tied a cat to a phone pole with, like, I don't know, some kind of wire?
Well, yeah, he pretty much tied the cat to a tree in his backyard, and the babysitter was like, "Oh fuck no, I'm not having anything to do with this dude.
I quit."
And the Christians are like, "Bring him to Camp Crystal Lake."
And from there, the rest is fucking history.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's true. I mean, if you read that comic, which, again, I don't know that you could consider it canon, but I do anyway because it nulls Jason Goes to Hell. you know, Pamela gets hired on at the camp as a cook, and then because the babysitter didn't want anything to do with Jason, you know, the Christies were like, "Hey, you know, you could kind of bring Jason to the camp, and we'll watch him while you cook for all these campers, and everything would be cool."
Even still, I kind of feel like if you take the comic out of the equation, I still kind of feel like if you watch it from the original one, I think more or less it does pretty much show you that Jason did in fact drown. I mean, you know, so I mean, it's a good question, but I don't really think there's a lot of wiggle room as far as, you know, if you're just looking at it from the basis of the original movies and kind of, like I say, taking the comic and the reboot out. I think it doesn't really leave a lot of wiggle room as far as whether or not Jason died. I think it's pretty clear that he did drown, and that's what really pushed his mom over and, you know, led to the events of the first movie.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think that even with the reboot, you can kind of take it either way, but I still feel like it implies at least that Jason drowned, like his mom said that he did. As far as the idea that Pamela had been training Jason to kill people, I feel like that's another thing that's not supported by what we see in the movie.
Well, I mean, they wouldn't have had a chance to intrude on Crystal Lake because at the beginning of the 1980 Friday the 13th, when they're singing the Kumbaya songs or whatever, and then the two counselors sneak off to the loft where they inevitably get caught by Mrs. Voorhees. Then after that, there was just, fires there. There were, water trouble with, water becoming stagnant and polluted or whatever that was probably Mrs. Voorhees. And, there wasn't a real need because people, it had a death curse.
What's that you say?
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you? You'll never come back again. It's got a death curse.
Enos, I mean, a guy, you know, a blue-collar guy that has a level head that's given Annie a ride halfway to Camp Crystal Lake, he tells her, quit. Go back. It's cursed. And so, you know, the locals knew something was off. Don't go this way. This place is bad. And, I mean, and they based that off of a kid that had drowned, allegedly, and two counselors that were murdered, some water problems, and some fires. And it wasn't until Steve Christie tried to open it up again, and Mrs. Voorhees, Betsy Palmer, says, well, to Alice, well, I couldn't let him open it up again.
Could I?
Could I? Exactly. Exactly. And I think that there just kind of put a big private property. Don't come here. Your life isn't worth that what
is,
we
that
have.
That is the greatest fucking analogy. That is the greatest fucking sentence that describes exactly what you should not do when you go to Camp Crystal Lake.
Aside from not going there in the first fucking place, I guess.
Absolutely. So, before we sign off, do you guys have any last thoughts? I mean, this was a special episode. Like, we didn't plan to do an episode like this, but due to your overwhelming questions, we figured we needed to devote an episode to Pamela herself. But do you guys have any last thoughts before we sign off tonight?
Yeah, I just want to say again, to as far as the feedback we got, Phil from Staten Island, thanks for calling in. Much appreciated. Glad you're listening. Glad you enjoyed the show. And as well to Jason Schultz, who I will refer to as Jason Voorhees now because I thought that's who it was at first, and I'm kind of sad now, but, you know, it's okay. Thanks for, you know, leaving the comment, and, you know, I appreciate you listening to the podcast, and hope y'all will tune in and tell all your friends and, you know, get the word around. We're going to do this a whole bunch more times.
Yep.
And the more questions you have, we'll make exceptions. We'll do special episodes. We will answer your question to the best of our ability. We're aficionados as well as anyone else. And thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to us. And please, more questions. Chris, do you have any contests that you want to introduce for next week's podcast?
Chris said whoever answers the next question on the show right, he'll send him a life-size poster of himself. I don't know if that's any. I don't know if that's any kind of incentive.
You know
or whatever.
What? You know what?
I personally
you know what?
Am not going to answer. I'm not.
Hang on, Eric. You know a lot about this shit, so I'm going to let you ask our viewers or / listeners a question. After Eric asks the question, same with last time, you will get 1 minute of airtime to talk about whatever you want dealing with the Friday the 13th series. So, Eric, you know what? Fuck it. Go ahead and ask a trivia question that you think no one will be able to answer.
Other than my girlfriend calling me out on the type of truck that they were driving in the opening sequence of Part 2, and we'll stick with Part 2, what were the two games that Ned had?
And that's a part two question, which is fitting since our next episode will be about Friday the 13th, part two.
Yes, yes.
The first person to get the question right and on the Facebook post of this episode will win 1 minute of airtime on the show. And we, like I said, you could discuss whatever you want as long as it deals with Friday the 13th. I'd like to encourage everyone to like our Facebook page. Also, please consider supporting the show by giving us a 5-star review on iTunes or by using our Amazon affiliate link to make purchases at said Amazon. which you can find at campbloodpodcast.com/Amazon. If you want to ask us a question or vindicate a theory, you can contact the show by sending an email to campbloodpodcast@outlook.com or by using hashtag campbloodpodcast on Twitter. Until next time.
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you? You'll never come back again. It's got a death curse.